Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
This is blasphemy. This is madness. This is the booth.
Staring down, looking at the bloodstained concrete. You're the dead MC, flying at my feet. You took a 9mm rhyme straight to your mind. Damn, my better split. This is my time, so I make my way up the block. Get to home base and lock that up. Crack the Cavassier and grab the phone. Call one of my troops up. Hope the soldier's homie says, yo, what's up, what's going on? Make it quick, cause I'm trying to get my stellar on. Go. Your girl, I'm in the... These lyrical assassins tried to pull a hit, and then boom, came a noise from the other room. It was the boys in blue with the SWAT crew. They got us locked up for lyrical murder. It's one of them charges that you never heard of. It's the booth. The booth. The booth. The booth. Yeah, it's the booth. The booth. The booth. Yeah, we're killing all your podcasts like the HIV virus. You want to battle this kid? Huh, don't even try this. Back the up, think again, count to 10. You want to grab that mic just to get done in? It's the booth. The booth. The booth. The booth. Yeah, it's the booth. The booth. The booth. The booth. Yeah, it's the booth.
Was he African?
African.
No, he was American, and he was like you. He looked just like you.
He was Jewish.
Just like
okay.
Him.
Okay, Jew. Hey. It's an odd crime for a Jew to commit.
Yeah, pretty docile.
Okay, so we have an African Jew wearing a hoodie.
No, you don't.
No.
No, that's not what I said. Is that what you heard me say? I said he looked like you. Do you look like an African Jew?
No, I look like a cop.
Yeah.
He was Caucasian.
Two. All right, your boy Sinister One broadcasting live from the City of Champions. You are listening to the booth 703-227. And, you know, we got a lot of busy stuff to talk about today. Today was the day, D-Day, Eagle Day. Today is the day that Jim Kinney, mayor of Philadelphia, had sent out a package on Friday and it arrived. And today was the day that our mayor, Carpenter, held up his end of the bet. And we donned the Rocky Marciano statue in Philadelphia Eagles gear. Our statue is so big that we couldn't put a jersey on the statue. So I don't know if you guys have seen the videos or pictures and stuff yet. The Philadelphia Eagle organization actually sent a team banner, this humongous banner that they use at their stadium. They sent that, and they also sent a scarf that was emblazoned with Super Bowl champions, which they asked Mayor Carpenter to wear while standing in front of our statue with this humongous Philadelphia Eagles banner that they placed on him. So the festivities today began about 1:30. Mayor Carpenter spoke and, you know, acknowledged the bet and, you know, talked about the whole Rocky versus Rocky and how we can make this a positive story. And it's really good. All the stuff is out there on Facebook. If you look it up and see it, you know, press coverage was big today. We had Getty Images, which is almost like the AP of the internet. They were here today. Nesson was here. Right. NBC was here. Just a lot of coverage. A couple of interviews. Kevin Tocci was there. Peter Zimbor was there. And, you know, like I said, the mayor was there. And I believe Todd Petty showed up. He's another politician. He was there to show up. We had some Patriots haters in the house. There was a gentleman there who's an official professional. He called himself a professional Patriots hater. He was there to see this statue be emblazed with Eagles attire. Now, my son actually had to work. He missed it, but he did get out of the work early enough to get down there and get some pictures. And I don't know if you guys have seen, my son Tyreek is already sharing his gloating pictures of him standing in front of the statue and flexing his muscle. And again, like I said, I've got to see my team, which was an AFC doormat, take home 5 championships. I can't hate on it. It's great to see my son.
Oh, hell, I can hate on it. I can hate all you want. Are you kidding me? Well, since when does that stop anyone from hating on? Excuse me. Yeah. Eagles fans, congratulations. Enjoy it while it lasts, because you are the New York Jets of the NFC, okay? You're one and done. Because you will never get another Super Bowl championship. You got so lucky this year. You played an incredibly weak division, and you had to do everything right to get to the playoffs and the championship, and you did. Credit you that. No dirty playing. You came to play. We didn't. We blew it. No question about it.
Well, we'll see what
happens. We underestimated you, and we didn't play to our potential, and we got nailed. So congratulations, but it'll never happen again.
Well, you can't say we didn't play to our potential. There were two key things that happened in that game that were game changers. And that game was a close game. It was 9-3. Patriots were driving down the field, and then the worst thing that could ever happened. Brady's wide receiver, long, fast threat that they signed this year, Brandon Cooks, takes a questionable hit across the middle. It was open field. You can argue this forever and say that was an illegal hit.
No, it was not an illegal hit.
At the end of the day, they ruled it. You know, they ruled it as, you know, a clean hit.
I'm sorry. It was maybe those types of hits should be illegal in the future. Possibly.
He led with the helmet. He led with the helmet. It was a helmet.
The helmet, but he didn't hit. But he didn't hit him helmet to helmet. And I think maybe No, he did. Because it's helmet to helmet, then the defenseless receiver rule kicks in. And he didn't hit him helmet to helmet. Well, helmet to shoulder.
Defenseless receiver is when he's not making a football move. So if he was up in the air, he was making a football move. He had actually caught the ball, turned around, and he spun 360. When
he spun 360, but he didn't take the two steps. Because remember, in order to become a football move, you've got to take control of the ball, have both feet on the ground, and take two consecutive steps. I don't think he did. Well, anyway, I think it was a vicious hit. Maybe it should be legal in the future, but it was a clean hit. It was a clean hit. I'm sorry. The Patriots defense can't allow people to get in the red zone 20 times in the Super Bowl game. I'm sorry. The defense, and I love Matt Patricia. You know, I got a man crush on his beard. But his boys did not step up. And I had a problem with the Patriots defense.
And that's part two of the other issue. The Malcolm Butler, which till this day we're never going to find out what happened. But Malcolm Butler not playing in this game was another key part of the loss. And we're never going to find out the truth.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, Eagles fans, enjoy it. Because, dude, August is coming around really quick, and we're going to own you next year.
I hope you're right.
Here's the other thing.
We could see them again, but here's the thing. They've got a little bit of problem down there. They've already, as soon as they won the Super Bowl, 2 weeks out, they were already saying that Carson Wentz is still the starter.
Right.
So they already know they're getting rid of Nick Foles. So.
And so he'll go out and make $40 million with some other franchise. Oh, I know, the Browns. Yeah.
He's definitely going to get overpaid because
Not exactly crying for him. Okay, he's going to get a big paycheck wherever he goes.
Yeah, he is because Jimmy Garoppolo set the tone for the rest of the quarterbacks in the league. Blake Bortles just got paid like $58 million for three years extension. The next one in line now is Kirk Cousins, which they're saying is going to land in Dallas, which means that Dak Prescott's injury is probably a lot worse than people realize if they're looking to bring Kirk Cousins to Dallas.
I can't believe that Washington would let Kirk Cousins go to Dallas. What a stupid move.
Excuse
me. Hold on a second. Who owns the Redskins? Dan Snyder.
Snyder.
I mean, the guy makes Donald Trump look like a stable genius.
He hasn't been the smartest guy in the NFL for a while.
No, he is the second biggest dumpster fire in the NFL. No, excuse me, third. Because Jerry Jones, number one, followed by a very close second by the Ginger Hammer, our commissioner, whose name I will not mention. He's like Baltimore. I will not mention his name. And then comes Dan Snyder. Only because Jerry Jones and the commissioner at least have some semblance of intelligence, and Dan Snyder is just, you know, a walking foreskin.
Mm. Ooh, that's rough. That's a tough one. I can't believe you just said that.
I can't believe we got Full Diesel already.
No, you have not gotten full diesel. This is like, I don't know, pre-full diesel, okay? Because of the crap that happened today, I am ready to blow my gasket, okay? Mm. You know, there's an old saying we have folks from Jersey have, and that is to go, every time I think so-and-so has hit rock bottom, the SOB breaks out a shovel and starts to dig.
You know, and I hate to say this too. It's everything has just gotten so crazy lately. Like I've reached a plateau to everything. Like since now we've been talking. Like I said, we've been talking about this Trump stuff before. Anybody's been talking about this Trump stuff. But since Donald Trump has been elected, there's been a lot of emotion and time wasted debating and going back and forth. I think in the last year and a half between Donald Trump being elected and all these issues that are tied into Donald Trump over this last year, and now this whole thing about gun control and the Florida shoot, the school shooting in Florida. I'm just so, dude, I am so emotionally drained right now of the discussions and just the things that people just forth. Like Florida, for instance, it's a tragic incident. You know, we our hearts were out to Robert. Robert had some friends who lost their daughter in the shooting, and I'm going to let Robert talk about that. But actually, let me let Robert talk about that first, because it's just a tragic moment. We'll talk about it. Robert, you want to jump in here real quick?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think by now everybody's familiar with what happened at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School down there in Parkland. It's not too far from where I am, and a good friend of mine from school lives there with his family, and of course, their daughter was one of the 14 students that was slaughtered by Nicholas Cruz on that day. From what we know, Nicholas Cruz went into the school knowing he was a former student there, and he knew that they were getting ready to be dismissed for the day, meaning there would be a lot of students who were ready to, you know, leave the classrooms and, you know, be milling about where they would be good targets. Not only that, but he pulled the fire alarm to make sure there was chaos in the hallways, and went in, and about 2:21, just started spraying the hallways, broke the windows into classrooms, and was shooting into the classrooms. Was obviously firing down the hallways. He shot a lot of kids in the back. Not that there's any proper way to do that, but you know, shooting people in the back who are trying to run for their lives is probably one of the most cowardly, despicable things you can do. Although there's mm-hmm. no way to do a school shooting that's not cowardly and despicable. So I suppose it doesn't matter at that point. But unfortunately, Jamie Guttenberg was shot in the back, running for her life down the hallway. And you know, we all have, I think we've heard the incredible damage done by the AR-15 round. I think this is the big story out of this. I mean, school shootings have become somewhat common in this country, and you know, Congress and a lot of states don't seem to want to do anything about it. But what people need to understand about these, the weapon of choice, the AR-15, which has been used in most of these shootings, yes, people can point to examples where there have been 9mm and other weapons, but it's the AR-15s that have been the deadliest in these type of mass shootings like that, because there was a doctor from the hospital down here, a trauma surgeon, that described what he saw in the operating room. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see that. He's published it, and he was actually a gun right, a gun rights person, and has changed his mind to do that, because he saw what an AR-15 round does when it enters a human body, even at a distance. It is traveling at such velocity with such force that when it goes into the body, it's not like it just travels right through you, and if it pierces something, it pierces something, or you know, makes you bleed. It destroys everything in its path. It is the ultimate destructive round that gets fired. For example, you know, you can get shot, let's say, in the torso, and it does something to an organ where doctors, assuming they can get you medical attention, can save you, can repair the organ. An AR-15 round pulverizes like a blender the organ. There's nothing left for surgeons, even the best trauma surgeons in the world. There's nothing left they can do. If you've been hit by that round, you are as good as dead, even if they get you to an emergency room right away. There is nothing they can do. And that's what happened to these kids. That's why it's such an awful thing. And that, to me, the debate, you know, you could talk about, look, everything should, these things happen, and we've got to stop it one way or another. But even without the school shootings, nobody needs a weapon that can cause that type of damage. Nobody, outside of military, of course, active duty military. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of where we're going in the discussion right now. You asked me to talk about Parkland, but
keep it going.
You know, so my point is that when you read testimony like that from this doctor and from others, the discussion should be in this country is, what the heck are we doing? Why can't we? And I understand the NRA's intransigence and they're all about gun sales and that, but there are some good people in the NRA who care about gun safety and care about school shootings. And it's long since overdue for these rank and file NRA members who are good people and who care about these issues to say, look, we need to dump Wayne LaPierre. He's a piece of garbage who hates this country. He hates everybody in it. He doesn't care who dies, just as long as he can sell a gun. And so, NRA members, it's time to get rid of Wayne LaPierre, and it's time to put in some reasonable leadership. And if the NRA as an organization won't do that, there are other gun rights organizations out there that promote gun safety, that promote reasonable gun safety measures, and that's where you can spend your money and effort. The NRA is done. They are done if they don't get the message this final time, because if you're going to take such an intransigent position that the type of damage done by this weapon in school shooting after school shooting after school shooting, and you still don't care, forget it. You know, arming teachers, come on now. Everybody knows that's not going to work. You know, there's no realistic solution. And even without the school shootings, there's absolutely no reason that private citizens need to have an AR-15. If you want to shoot them at a range, then maybe the range can have some that you can get as a loaner and it doesn't leave with you. There are ways to accommodate people who are good sports shooters and everything else. But there is no reason to have those things at your home, to be walking around with them, to have the capacity to hurt people in this way. I'll stop right now because I think Diesel wants to get in here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That was the most politest full Diesel imitation I've ever heard. Go ahead. I'll let you go, Ken, before I talk.
Well, absolutely. And let me say this. My mother, Lord rest her soul, taught public school for almost 30 years. And I love her to death. And she was a great woman. But there's no way in heck I would want her going within 40 meters of a firearm.
That's right.
There are just certain people who shouldn't have firearms, and my mother was at the top of the list. And here's the other thing. I'm going to post this to R squared. I think I know the answer. The military, if you're at a military base, let's take – you were at Fort Lewis in Washington, right? That was your last posting?
Yes.
Okay. Major base, right? Walking around with a lot of very highly trained, highly disciplined young men and women who are trained on the proper use of firearms, sidearms, and – automatic rifles and other weapons, correct?
Yes.
Now, let me ask you this question. Did the base commander allow those soldiers free access to the weapons anytime they wanted, or were they restricted to, like, when they're going to the range or they're on duty?
Well, that's exactly the right point. And every military installation, certainly in the Army, and I believe all services, because it's Department of Defense policy, is you do not have permission to walk around the installation with your official weapon or your personal weapons. If you're going to check out – first of all, official weapons, they're kept in the arms room and they're carefully regulated. You know, it takes several steps to get them out to go to the range for training. There are several steps to check them all back in. If there's so much as a piece of brass missing, nobody gets to leave until it's found. I mean, it's very, very secure process, and that's how it should be. For personal weapons, you keep personal weapons in the unit arms room. There, you can keep some weapons in family quarters if you have a private home, but it has to be locked in a gun safe, and you're limited to what you can have on the premises. The point is that the military, who has the best training and knowledge and experience with these weapons, knows that you don't leave them in the hands of people when you're off duty, that there's no need for that. You can have your own hunting weapons. You can have your own self-defense weapons, that type of thing, but it's very carefully regulated. And I'd like to add one point to that, because this is the irony of this, to your point. Several years ago, and I'm trying to remember when it started, but because of the prevalence of military assault weapons and private ownership and the focus on domestic violence, and, you know, the confluence of some serious problems that we had, the military was trying to go to really great lengths to really control the access to weapons on the installation for the safety of all. And they were trying to do that. The NRA had the gall to even complain to Congress, whereas they threatened, as they usually do, the members of Congress, obviously, to lose their seats, to lose their funding, the bought and paid for Republicans, to force DOD to change their gun safety regulations that were necessary by military commanders, again, who understand these weapons better than anybody. The NRA even forced Congress to take that authority away from them because God forbid that even even the military doesn't have the right to regulate safety in our communities. I thought that was ridiculous.
I couldn't agree more, and that's my whole point. I was trying to draw an analysis. Our military is one of the most best trained, best disciplined forces in the world. And they even put restrictions on weapons. I'll give you another example. A lot of people say, well, you know, look at the Israelis. Everyone carries a weapon in Israel. And the answer is no, they don't. Because I know Israelis. I was in Israel a couple of years ago, and it's very tightly controlled. The only time you're allowed a weapon in Israel is if you're on duty, either as police, border control, or a soldier. And while the soldiers carry around weapons, they do not carry ammunition. That's one of the interesting things. They don't carry ammunition. And matter of fact, ammunition control is even harder to get, even more controlled than rifle controls. And because everybody in Israel is trained on a rifle and a pistol. So, but the ammunition, actually, it is illegal, and it's a mandatory 5-year term in jail if you are caught illegally possessing ammunition, just ammunition, not to mention the rifle that it goes into.
You know, speaking of, here's the epitome of safety and why it's important. Okay, and I know we have some other veterans who listen to the show, and they can, you know, send a message if they agree with this. But when I was in Iraq, and as you know, I was in Iraq for the invasion in 2003. So that's the ultimate in harm's way and the need for weapons, right? Can you think of a more important time to have weapons, you know, and access to weapons and ammunition, everything else, when you're in a shooting war with an enemy and an enemy that's not going to fight by the rules? So you certainly need it. Guess what? Even under those circumstances, we were limited to how we could carry weapons, how many rounds you could have, and you were never, ever allowed to have rounds chambered or rounds even locked and loaded. You had to have your weapon. You had to demonstrate it everywhere you went that your weapon was on safe and was empty, and that your rounds, which are carefully regulated, were locked securely, you know, on your vest or, you know, other things, but not with your weapon. So even under those circumstances, we had significant safety things, and it didn't cost anybody their lives. You know, these were good safety mechanisms, tried and true methods for everybody's well-being. And trust me, when you needed to lock and load, you had the ability and the training to do it, and it was not a problem. But even under those circumstances, yet here we are, you know, people in schools or people just living their lives, and we can't have reasonable gun safety. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I'm totally with that. And let me say this. I'm a guy who owns his, 4 pistols and a shotgun, okay? And I enjoy going to the range, and I've gone to the range and shot both semi-automatic military-style weapons and fully automatic military-style weapons at licensed firearm ranges with an instructor, literally, you know, the joke thing about over your shoulder, he literally was looking over my shoulder, okay? And it's a lot of fun. I'm not going to deny it. I had a big thrill. But the idea that you would allow me – because I remember I shot – it wasn't an AR-15. It was a very similar model, but it wasn't an AR-15. And I remember thinking – and they only gave me 5 rounds because that's all they'd give you at once. And I can't imagine – you know, and there was literally a retired Marine master sergeant behind me who was a firearm instructor at Quantico. You know, this is the guy you want standing literally right behind me. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I've got 5 rounds, which is what you can have in the average revolver, or in my automatic carries more than that. But that was the limit I had, and now this is the kind – and I was feeling nervous about having that, and I was out of range. There was no one else around us. It was downfield going into the giant targets followed by this giant sand mound. I don't know what it's probably got an official name that was like 20 feet wide and 100 feet deep. I mean, an artillery shell could be stopped by that thing. So I don't know why these people think they should walk around town. I don't know if you saw this, those clowns last summer who walk around Chipotle, you know, tooled up, looking like they were, you know, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome or whatever. I mean, what the? I mean, seriously, dude, what are you thinking? I mean, I know cops won't do that.
Right, right. I got to acknowledge some people in the chat. Ricky Fitz is in the chat. He says it's a 223-round gavel, travels at supersonic speed, used in several weapons. He also added the Florida tragedy is another example of our government who failed to do the right thing. And it's funny because we've got R Squared on here. He's condemning this AR-15. Frank, who was on the show last week when we first talked about this, he condemned the AR-15. And, you know, it just stinks because, you know, the week prior this incident, actually not even the week prior, the day before, I had predicted a mass shooting and said that I had had a dream of a mass shooting at the Black Panther film. And I told somebody to leave there. You know, they're semi-auto weapons at home, blah, blah, blah. And then we talked about that dream and stuff on the show. And then, Ken, you made this comment about, you know, school shootings and there had been this many. And then the next day it was like, holy Christ, you know, I just hate when stuff like that happens. For me, there was something that I pointed out when we talked the last time we were on, we were able to talk about it a little bit. What stuck out to me, it was those interviews with the kids. And the first thing I noticed when they were talking to the kids the day of that shooting, and I picked up – because, you know, I'm one of these people that's very observant, and I listen and pay attention. And it was how many kids were getting up there and saying that they knew that this kid was going to be the one. They knew it. And that jumped out to me. And then as the story – began to develop and come along. And I had mentioned this to people. I'm like, hey, you know, did anybody pick up on that about the kids? How many kids were saying? And they were like, oh, yeah, it's not that big of a deal. You know, it's just something. And then we realized, no, this kid was well known more than we realized. And now, after today, we really, really know how well known that this kid was. It's so well known that the tip that came from out of state actually came from Massachusetts, which is crazy. Again, Massachusetts is thrown into this mix. And it's the fact that, you know, I watched the town hall on CNN over the weekend, and I saw the Broward County Sheriff, you know, he was saying how the facts were wrong and they were only out to the kid's house this many times, and now they've come to find out that they were out to the kid's house. More than that, before his mother had passed away, him and his brother were both problem childs. I usually beat up the NRA guys. I think the NRA has to definitely do something about the AR-15. No question there. No question there. But as far as the gun buying, you know, we talked about this, and Frank had said it best. Let's get it across the I got somebody actually calling the show. Add to group call. Let me add this person to our group call. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, who's this?
Caller. This is Nico Silva.
Hey, what's up, Nico? Oh, you're a week early.
A week early? Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. Oh,
so, we'll let you chime in real quick, but I'll let you just you're actually on our show next Tuesday night to promote a wrestling event that's going on Friday at the BFW. I'm going to let you break it down. Okay, here we go. Here's your chance to plug you coming on next Tuesday night live with us.
First of all, I couldn't believe it was next Tuesday. I was so excited to call, you know?
Friday,
we got a big time grudge match. Me and my trainer, former friend, Ryan Waters, been calling him out for the last year or so, and, you know, he's stabbed me in the back multiple times. And next Tuesday, I'll get more in depth on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely going to bring you in. I'm like, who's the 401 call? I'm like, wow, we got a caller tonight. Usually everybody just sits in the chat and they comment in the chat. I'm like, man, we got a caller on the show. And you actually found the number without us even telling you the number yet. I'm like, so that's impressive too. I'm like, how did you get the number? And I haven't even, you know, talked to your manager yet to lock it all down. I'm like, that impresses me. Nico Silva, VFW, it's a big event. Next week. And definitely call back next week. We're going to have you on. I need a promo headshot for you to come on the show, and we can promote the hell out of this. And we'll definitely see you next Tuesday. Okay, man?
Sounds good.
Cool. Thank you, Nico. All right, bye.
All right.
That was pretty awesome. That was pretty awesome. So usually I beat up the NRA for everything, you know, and I usually say what I have to say. But this time, guys, it was just so much. There were so many people who dropped the ball. He was in DCF's care. When his mother passed away, he had already had so many issues that I feel like DCF should have stepped up and said, hey, we need to bring this kid in for a wellness check. He's been such a problem child before this time. The only thing I think, and I'm going to ask both you guys, because I know, can you carry? The only thing I think that really needs to change, and Frank has said it, we need one straight across the board regulations and rules and laws for guns and buying guns. We need that. And I think everybody agrees on that. There's too much red tape. There's too much confusion with every state having its own, number one. Number two, there's one thing that sticks out to me that would have stopped this whole massacre from happening. And that is, if this kid's school record was available on the background check, he would have never been able to buy this gun. This kid.
Oh, okay. Stop right
guy,
there.
Hold on.
No, 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 no.
Let me finish. This kid tried to commit suicide twice. This kid had made threats to friends, family, school. He had previously brought weapons to school before, but because they were trying to bring teen crime down and sweeping crap under the rug there, this is why this situation happened the way that it happened. And it's sad that for politics and for statistics – that this kid fell through the cracks because they wanted to keep their teen crime statistics low by sweeping everything under the rug and ignoring it. You know what I'm saying? And that's tough, because if this kid's school record, and I know, Ken, you're a defense attorney, you're probably saying no one's school record should be allowed on the background check. I think if it's as bad as this kid's was, if you have to be expelled three times, that crap should go on your background check. I'm sorry. And I'm going to let you go full diesel and tell me why.
Okay. Okay. First of all, let's start with some facts, which you clearly listen to the NRA. Mm-hmm. Number one, there was no background check because he bought the gun at a gun show. And there are no background checks at gun shows. It's called the gun show loophole for that reason. Number two, I'm going to use an old Buddy Hackett routine. Mm-hmm. You know who Buddy Hackett was? He was a great comedian.
He was a comedian.
Right. And he used to say this, which is more dangerous, which is more disgusting, a hand or an ass, okay? And he said, imagine this, some guy's got a revolver in his hand, he's pointing at your head, you can see the bullets in the cylinder, you hear the click as he pulls the trigger back, are you scared? Now imagine that same guy with the gun stuck up his ass, are you going to freaking care? No. It's real simple. If he doesn't have the firearm, he's a jerk and no one cares about him. The only reason he was able to do this was because he had access to a firearm. And I don't care if the kid had mental health issues. I don't care if everyone and his mother knew who he was, having problems. No, that wasn't the problem. The problem was an AR-15. And that is the first, last, and only problem. Sinister One, I deal with people all the time who've got huge problems, who are violent, who have attacked people. Hell, some of my clients have even attacked me. All right? But not one of them was armed with a firearm at the time. Okay?
Well, the thing is,
that's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. What I wanted to add was, you know, right on the heels of this thing, Governor Scott down here, you know, had the nerve to try to blame, you know, other people and blame, you know, the bureaucrats and whatever, that there were missed signals. And I'll say this as a caveat. Clearly, from the things that we have learned, they need to look at, you know, the Florida Department of Children and Families, the Broward County Sheriff. You know, there are a lot of things, and they have to look at it, and hopefully they get some good guidance. But the fact of the matter is, there's always something that doesn't work because these bureaucracies aren't perfect and they're not resourced properly and everything else. Okay, so we need to look at those things, because whatever errors happen, we need to know, and people need to be held accountable. But Governor Scott and others, it is your Florida laws that allowed this to happen. And this is what people may not understand, because every state, like Frank was talking about, every state has its own rules and regulations, and people mm-hmm. don't always understand what the difference is. Well, down here in Florida, Florida is one of the most NRA-friendly, gun-friendly states in the entire nation. And there is, for AR-15s or any rifle, there is no waiting period. You can walk into a store. I know, Ken, you're talking about the gun show loophole. That's a problem in all across the country. In Florida, you can go to a gun store, not just a gun show, but a gun store, buy an AR-15 with no waiting period. You go in, you pay your money, you leave with your frickin' rifle. That is a problem. So Governor Scott and the Florida legislature, this was on your hands because you allowed an 18-year-old kid, even without the things that we know about his background, to go in and buy this weapon of war and leave without any kind of a background check, without any kind of a waiting period. And that is the fault of the Florida state government and Governor Rick Scott. You want to know why? Because they all get millions of dollars from the NRA. They're bought and paid for. And when the Florida legislature, you just saw this, it was down party lines. One Republican switched sides, and it was still defeated. 7 Republicans to 5 Democrats and 1 Republican. The committee refused to allow the military assault weapons legislation to go forward to the floor for even a full debate. So this is the problem that you have in this state and many others, where the politicians are completely blasé. They won't allow anything to come up for debate, and they don't even want to fix the background check. So this goes to your point, Sinister One, that you know, with all the things in his background, with or without the school record, there was plenty of stuff in his background. But we don't do that here, and the NRA won't let us do that here. So you can talk about the failures of the bureaucratic systems at play, and we do need to look into that, and we do need to fix it. But none of it would have mattered because we don't do background checks in this state.
And that's horrible, because there was so much stuff in this kid's background that I'm definitely sure our gun shop owner would have said, yeah, you know what, kid? Take a hike.
They wouldn't.
I just feel like that.
Not here.
Excuse me. I'll give you, you know, you go back in time. There was a man named Charles Whitman. Hmm. He was a gentleman, you probably weren't born that, but in 1963, I think maybe it was 62, he bought a number of firearms. I think it was 15 or 16, climbed to the tower at the University of Texas and gunned down over 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When they investigated, they found he had bought all these firearms from the same gun shop owner at the same time. He literally walked in and bought like 20 pistols, rifles, and shotguns. When they asked the owner of the shop why he did sold them all these weapons all at once, you know what the owner said? There's no law against it, and that's what I do for a living.
That's right.
Okay?
Yeah, it's scary. It like I said, it's tough. And, you know, the one thing that – I got to get our guest in here. I got to give her a call. The other thing that the NRA – there was something that the NRA pissed me off too. This new spokesperson that the NRA has thrown out there, who was at the CNN.
Dana Loesch.
Okay, this to me is the
– she's a vile piece of shit.
The NRA, and I hate to say this, they're trotting her out there because why? Sex friggin' sells.
And no! It ain't so.
The pictures
about her comments at CPAC. They were vile and disgusting, along with Wayne LaPierre's. If anybody watches that, you tell me if that's how we treat each other in America.
Yeah, you know what? And the NRA is proud to promote. The NRA was under fire, actually, for an ad that they had with her, where she had a misfit shirt on and she was firing a rifle or in some guns. And I was like, you know what? She's up there. She's all looking nice and stuff. And I says, you know, she's carrying and holding all these guns with this phallic image. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, the NRA is really – I says, does anybody else see what I'm seeing right here? I'm like, you take this woman who most of the guys in the NRA are going to say, oh, she's super hot. And to me, you're using sex to sell – your image. And it, to me, I'm like, wow, this is crazy stuff. And I kind of wanted to get on the NRA about that. But I've seen a lot of bad things about her. You're not the first one that's talked about that, like her R-squared. Where the hell does she come from anyway?
I have no idea. But I mean, whatever rock or swamp they dug her out of, maybe she should go back to it.
They're telling her around. She's got a podcast and stuff, and you know she's
well. Let me tell you something. The only reason I haven't gone full diesel on everyone is because apparently right now, I don't know if you've seen some of the students, the Parkland survivors. I don't know what their official name is. They have it. Has got the NRA so scared mm-hmm. but they're running for cover. And I just love it. Someone put on Facebook earlier today, they had a picture of one of them, a nice Hispanic young woman with a buzz cut, and says, and someone put a picture of her, and she goes, you know, it's really nice to see these macho white guys with guns being scared to death of a teenage Hispanic with a buzz cut. And I'm going, abso-freaking-lutely.
I was calling our guest here. Let me just see if our guest, Tamara, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. We have a guest that called in early, was able to find the number to the booth before I even locked it down and told his manager. Awesome. Then I call this young woman who's a guest on our show tonight. She joins the call live. Most of the time, everybody who joins our call live, they're like, hello, or this or that. She comes in. She stayed quiet. Didn't even know she was here. And so professional. Have you ever been on the radio before?
Yes, I'm a DJ at my campus.
Oh, man.
Well, there goes that story.
Yeah. That explains it. But that's still good, though. I mean, that's still awesome.
Thank you.
Oh, well, give yourself a plug before we get to jump you in here. Let's give yourself a plug in your radio station.
So I listen the radio station for us is WBIM 91.5 Bridgewater State University. I go on from 5 to 7. Mine's called The Little Mix of Everything.
Nice. Wow, I wasn't expecting that. Because usually everybody comes on and they're like, hello. And they're, I was giving you props, and I'm still going to give you your props. So this is our guest, Tamara Pyers. Yes. She's on, and she's going to speak with us real quick about this fundraiser that she has going on, and we're going to let her speak. We were supposed to have her on about 7:30, but we were talking about this Florida shooting, and we were having a discussion about the NRA. And to be honest, I think it's been beaten up enough. Let's see what happens here with Nicholas Cruz. The trial is going to be real interesting. Let's see what happens here. But you're joining me, Sinister One. My compadres, R-Squared, mm-hmm. Ken Diesel is on with us. And Tamara, just let them know what you're on here for. Let's get this going.
So my name's Tamara. I'm from Brockton, so go champions.
Thank you.
So I'm doing a fundraiser because me and my sister, we're both born with cerebral palsy. And we're both, I'm graduating this year, but we're both seniors. And we're finding it, a hard time to, travel mm-hmm. around without a car. I do appreciate public transportation.
Yep.
It's a blessing, but it is a curse at the same time, because going from one place to another, sometimes BAT bus,
public transit,
either Lyft, yeah, sometimes it doesn't work, or it's too full. So it's either I'm too early for an interview or too late, and
right.
it's never good to be too late to an interview.
Right.
So me and my sister. Oh, sorry. Were you about to say something?
No, I want to touch base because I got Ken's a defense attorney. R-Squared is a JAG officer, so they know a lot of stuff about disabled rights, the rights of the ADA and all that
yeah.
stuff. And I worked 23 years at the MBTA, and I can tell you right now, when I saw you talking about how the wheelchair lift doesn't work and this and that, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not giving you anything. I'm going to tell you right now that a lot of the bus drivers that are telling you that, I'm going to tell you I'm calling BS, because they're supposed to do a circle check before they pull their bus out on the route. And that's part of that circle check by law is to test the wheelchair lift. So what happens is, and bring her back here. What happens is, hold on, let me see. Tamara, are you back with us?
Yeah, disconnected.
Okay. Yep, no problem. So what happens is that these drivers are supposed to do a circle check before they pull their bus out for the route. One of the parts of the circle check is testing that wheelchair lift. They have to do that by law. So
yeah.
what happens is, and I hate to say this, what happens with a lot of drivers on a route, and we saw this at the MBTA, and this is probably going to sicken the hell out of you guys when you hear this. A lot of drivers won't pick up a handicapped passenger or someone who's disabled for the reason that you have passengers who either make it uncomfortable or they cause a ton of problems for that disabled passenger. Why? Because when you have to get a disabled passenger on your bus, you have to stop the bus, you have to put the lift out, get that person on the bus. Of course, they have the special seating that you have to fold up. And then there's this special strapping, wheelchair straps and belts that have to be secured to the wheelchair passenger. It's very time consuming, but they have to make sure that they're safe, they're sound, and their wheelchair is not going to go anywhere in case of an accident. We have had situations where I was at the T, where the T police had to go out. Why? Because you had passengers who wanted to assault disabled people, or they wanted to spit on drivers or disabled people because why? They were holding up that bus trip, and they were going to be late to work. And I couldn't believe that that's one of the reasons why a lot of guys don't, or drivers won't pick up disabled passengers. And it's sad because, like I said, I know they're supposed to do that circle check before they pull out. And if that wheelchair lift doesn't work, that bus is supposed to go in the work row so that wheelchair lift can be fixed. So it's a tough one. And have you ever had that happen when you were on a bat bus? And
I feel like people are understanding, but like you get those looks like, yo, I'm trying to go to work. And I'm like, I'm trying to do the same thing. I'm like, I'm sorry that I'm kind of getting in your way, but then again, it's not my fault.
Right.
So it's like, I do get the look sometimes, but I kind of just brush it off because I'm like, I can't do nothing about it. Like, if you wanted to do something quicker, you could have got a taxi. I can't get a taxi.
Or Uber. Or Lyft.
Yeah. Like you have so many other options than a bus. I only get, like, a bus, maybe, like, a train.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, people have way more options, but then they always complain about the options that they do get. And I'm like, I understand it, but it's like, I just wish I had my own, because sometimes, like, relying on other people even sucks too, because it's like, you don't want to feel like a burden to them. You don't want to be like, oh, can you, like, do this for me? Because then it's like, you're asking for something that I feel like you shouldn't be asking for. And I hate asking people for things. So it's like, annoying. So it's like, I just want a car. I really do. It's my senior year.
So you have this GoFund set up for you and your sister to try to raise money for a disabled fan. Now we have Ken Diesel, who's a defense attorney. He's worked hand in hand with Mark Schapetta, and I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Schapetta, the radio show host, whose both twin boys suffer from Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Ken, over the many, many years that we've known Mark, Ken has been involved with helping Mark acquire certain assets and acquire certain grants and acquire certain things that allowed him to help his kids get vehicles. They actually just got a van that I know that Ken and Craig Pina were involved with helping his kids purchase. And unfortunately, it got wrecked, and then they ended up having to get another one. But it was incredibly hard to get it insured. But Ken, you want to jump in here because you've been involved with this topic for a long time as far as vehicles and
the adopted vehicles – well, not a long time, about 20 years. But there are a number of grant programs out there. As a matter of fact, Wheels Throw a Strong Foundation, which is one that – open disclosure, I'm the general counsel of – actually does put out grants that will allow you – they're not very much money, $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you can use it for is making your home or vehicle more handicap accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So you should go to our website, Wheels Throw a Strong, and fill out a grant application.
Mm-hmm.
And start over there.
All right, I just
said that. Our charity does that. That's exactly one of the things that we do. It's one of the reasons we set it up. But yeah, I mean, I've been involved with that for many, 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 many years. As a matter of fact, one of the guys I went to college with, a guy named Pat Standen, who is now Professor Pat Standen at St. Mike's College, was the first person I ever roomed with who was confined to a wheelchair due to a car accident when he was 18 years old. And it really opened my eyes because until you actually walk with someone like that and see the problems that they – some of the challenges they have, you don't appreciate it. I mean, you know, it really opened my, you know, 20-year-old eyes to another world. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I will last 5 minutes in a wheelchair. That's all I can say. The fact that you're able to get on mass transportation and do it is simply incredible. And, you know, I don't care how busy I am. I keep my freaking mouth shut. Because I remember one time we had – give you a quick example. The Billings Student Center was brand new when I was at UVM. Unfortunately, when they designed it, they didn't design it with anybody in mind. For example, one of the areas to get your food, you had to go through this doorway, which was not wide enough for your average wheelchair. The handicap ramps were the turnaround was too sharp. They couldn't turn it around. They had to redo the handicap ramps. The elevators required a key that you had to go apply for and give a $100 deposit. That was back in 1985. $100 was a lot of money to a starving college student. So that was just one of the issues we dealt with.
And here's the other thing too. ADA laws are just as confusing, to be honest, as the gun laws. Like you hear always, people will always say, "Oh, well, that building shouldn't be that way. That building should have wheelchair ramps, accessibility. Everything has it." It's like, no, it's not. Know your law. You know, I work for the MBTA.
Reasonable accommodation.
Yep. Not every building. A lot of buildings are grandfathered not to have wheelchair unless the owner of that building is going to get the money to make the modifications needed. But some buildings are so old that you can't make those modifications. City Hall here in Brockton has that issue right now. The City Hall building is old. The elevator in that building is now out of service. And guess what? That elevator cannot be fixed or repaired because nobody in the country makes or repairs that elevator no more. So what does City Hall have to do? They have to procure and put a bid out and have another company come in. They're going to have to rebuild this whole elevator shaft and put a updated elevator inside City Hall. That's not that easy. You're dealing with an old building, an old structure. It's not set up like these buildings are today. And it's a tough thing they face. So you have this GoFund set up. We are trying to raise money. Ken just told you about Wheelchair Strong, but how do we find this GoFund so people can?
You could go to GoFundMe.com and then the search bar, you could write Priory's Twins Fundraiser, and that's how you find it.
Cool. Do you want to add anything, R-Squared?
No, I think this is very compelling stuff. I'm sorry to hear about even the extra challenges involved from these jerks on the bus, but hopefully people will respond favorably to your efforts. I wish you the best.
Thank you. If you can, if you have a link, an actual link to that GoFund, put it to our page, share it to each one of us, so we can get it out there and try to help you get this on and going. And like I said, reach out to Mark Schepeta and his boys, Troy and Andrew. Let them know what you're trying to do. And Mark's a real good guy. I'm pretty sure he will do what he can to help you and get the word out there for you. And we can see about going from there. Reach out to another place, Everett's Auto Parts. I'm going to put them out there. Everett's Auto Parts is a junkyard. They get vans, handicap vans and stuff that people don't want anymore at the junkyard. Sometimes reach out to them and see what they can do for you and help you out with that. And then sometimes you might be able to get an auto body shop who will help you with your cause, to be honest. I believe early on, Ken, didn't Modern Auto Body help Mark Schepeta out early on?
Yeah, they helped him a lot. They what's interesting is apparently I didn't realize this, but Modern Auto Body Part is one of the, is a certified a car adapted whatever it is that you need you to adapt a car to for I'm trying to use the word not use the word handicap, but some people find that insulting.
Modified.
They can do it, and they charged him just for the parts. They threw in the labor for free, so it saved him thousands of dollars.
Nice.
Yes, it's so much money. Like for you guys, a regular car, like a new car, is like $60. $60,000, and for like a used car, it's like $60 for somebody to modify. So it's like sometimes it's so unfair because you have to go like more money for like for somebody else, it would be like less money. So it's like so annoying for me personally.
Right. Well, Tamara, we thank you for coming on. GoFund, it's out there. Share that link with us. We hope we can help you and your sister out. And thank you for calling in.
Thank you for letting me be your guest.
No problem. And call us back. Call us back in about a month or so, and just let us know how it's going.
Okay, I will.
Okay. All right. Take care, Tamara. Yeah, okay. All right.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. cool stuff. We got about 4 minutes left. We want to get into this Admiral Rogers real quick before we get out of here. I actually got to get off the air. My daughter was cheerleading at Brockton High, so their game is over. So I got to get the call to go pick her up. So let's call this. Let's get this done, guys. You there?
All right, R squared. Yeah. I think.
Yep.
No, R squared. You wanted to lead with it, so go. I'll follow your lead.
Oh, no. I mean, I think a lot of people have seen. I was watching the testimony this morning of Admiral Rogers and the others from the intelligence community and the exchange with Senator McCaskill and others where they basically admitted, because, look, these are honorable people. They're stuck in a bad situation. And when they're asked point blank, they told the truth. And the truth was that President Trump has prevented them from actually stopping the Russians from meddling in the 2018 elections, from taking the lessons we learned from 2016 and trying to apply them. And I heard that and I couldn't believe I just couldn't believe it. I understand that the president has his issues and his narcissism and whatever else, and he can't admit what happened in 2016. But I was really hoping that at least behind the scenes, the intelligence community was being able to work this issue with protecting our election system in the midterms. There's too much at stake here. It's going to be a contentious and close election in a lot of places. We can't have another thing where the Russians meddle in the election and we don't really know the fidelity of the outcome. This is an awful thing. And quite frankly, I want to say that the intelligence community, I understand that they take orders, especially in the military, and I'm not suggesting that they do anything improper, but I don't know that in the positions they have, that they need permission from the president to actually do what they're supposed to be doing, which is safeguarding our elections. It's one thing to speak publicly about Russian interference and to take offensive or take action against Russia. I understand they need the president for that, but I don't believe that they need to wait for presidential permission to safeguard our election systems. I was very troubled by that today.
Well, I was infuriated by it because I think something we need to bring our audience up to speed with, who Admiral Rogers is. Admiral Rogers is the director of the National Security Agency and also the director of U.S. Cyber Command, who is charged with basically safeguarding our computer infrastructure, which includes just about everything, Skype, for example, elections, banking, everything like that. It's a huge responsibility. And this guy, who's I believe a four-star admiral, he's a full admiral or a four-stripe admiral. I'm not sure. I think I'm using the wrong nomenclature there, came up in a public hearing under oath. And this is really surprising because it's always been my thing that the uniformed military doesn't like to call people out in public. They like to deal with things privately. You know, it's chain of command. We're all working together. They don't like to embarrass anybody unless they have to. And he basically came out and said, and I watched the testimony, I almost fell off my chair, saying that he was being prevented from doing his job. Now, this is incredible. We are talking – I mean, we've talked about this before. When we talk about the allegations of collusion, we've talked about Trump. But look, he has said, I'm a U.S. military officer. My job is – I've been given the assignment by my command structure to safeguard one of the things he's doing, not the only thing he's doing, is to safeguard the election structure. And I'm being told that I can't do my job. My God! I mean, why aren't people rioting in the streets? I mean, I was utterly infuriated when I heard this, and I'm sorry. There's a point where I understand the Republicans need to protect their base and the electoral advantage, but there's a line at which you go from partisan politics to conspiracy to commit treason. And I'm sorry, that's the line you can't cross, and you are. Now, getting back to your question, R squared, from what I read, and this is fifth-hand hearsay, and I am far from an expert on this. You have much more expertise in command structure and military law and operational orders than I ever will. You probably forgot more of it than I ever will. But from what I understand is – he's allowed to do certain things as comes with the command, but there are other things that he wants to do that he needs permission from the commander-in-chief, i.e. Donald Trump, to do, and they're refusing to give it to him. Unfortunately, from what I've been able to determine, all of that information is exactly what he wants to do is classify it for obvious reasons. You don't want to tell me what you're doing. And apparently you need to run up the chain of command and get the yes sir, get the chop, I believe, because that's what it's called, the commander's chop when they give approval.
Informally, yes.
you know, permission, and he's refusing to do it for whatever reason. Now, Donald Trump has never been what we call a deep thinker. He's not a wonk. He's not a policy guy. And frankly, he probably doesn't understand what the heck he's reading. And he's also notoriously lazy. He doesn't like making decisions. He doesn't like reading. And it could be simply that someone has put in the request and it's sitting on someone's desk waiting for the commander-in-chief to give his permission. That being said, this is absolutely and completely disgusting. And maybe a little public embarrassment will, you know, get his head out of his you-know-what. But that's another thing. But here's something else I want to talk about. And, you know, I think we talked about this before on IM, on instant messaging. Okay, for those of you who have been sleeping under a rock or have been in a coma for the last couple of weeks, let's recap. There is something in the United States we call security clearances. There are various levels. And what you do is you get a various level. The more higher level is, the more information you can see. Both Robert and I at various points in our legal careers had security clearances. I had mine about 30 years ago. He probably had it 5 months ago.
I still have it.
You still have it. Okay. Now, and what you get a security clearance, you have to go through a vetting process. A lot of paperwork. A lot of people get an interview. They run a background check, whatever. Now, to do your job, sometimes you're allowed to get an interim clearance, meaning, okay, while we're processing your paperwork, we determine you're not a Russian spy, you're not crazy, we'll give you, you know, temporarily so you can do your job until you're formally cleared. And apparently that half of Javanka, I think they're calling it Jared and Ivanka, they're calling it Javanka, only had an interim security clearance. And he had that for a year, which is very unusual considering he was giving access to the president's daily intelligence briefing. And apparently he wasn't the only one. So today, after this was exposed, his security clearance was downgraded to secret. Now, this is where I'm a little concerned. I had a secret clearance when I was a staff assistant on Capitol Hill 30 years ago. And my rank was right below that of the janitor. So that's how low my security clearance was. Basically, I was able to use the bathroom in Capitol Hill, and that was about it. I used to joke that before my security clearance, I had to sit outside the lobby of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So when I was dropping off mail or getting packages for my senator, when I got my security clearance, I was actually allowed to go into the lobby, but no further. So here's the thing. It turns out he's been only given secret clearance, which will allow him to work in the White House, but only limited things, which will not allow him to read the president's daily briefing book. Now, Arsgard, here's my question to you. I seem to thought that my secret clearance was rather low. You're telling me actually it's a little higher than I thought. Is that right? Did I screw that up? Did I actually have a higher security clearance than I thought I did?
No, it's just secret clearance is probably the most common clearance, and it covers the majority of people. For example, on active duty, you've got, you know, obviously a huge military force with all the services, and the vast majority of us have secret clearances. You only go for a top secret, and then there's top secret SCI above that, which is even more limited. But you only go for the top secret if you're specifically going to be in a duty position that requires you to have access to that, which is the top tier of the intelligence community or top tier of Pentagon leadership. But for the most part, even as a senior person like I was as a colonel, I thought it was decent enough, but we functioned for our entire careers with just secret clearances. And I was happy with that. I did not want the top secret because only a few people can get top secret in the organization. And once you have it, then you're going to get pegged for all those extra duties that require the top secret clearance. And quite frankly, those were not the jobs I wanted in my career. As you know, I had all the jobs that I wanted as a leader with my secret clearance, and I was happy to do that. And so if there were just very, very rare occasions where I had to be read on to something with special permission. But for the most part, secret clearance was more than adequate to do what I needed to do. And I was happy to not go higher than that.
Okay, that's very
interesting. Hold on.
Sinister One is back.
Sinister One is back. For those of you who –
This is how I love my technology bleep. So My daughter is cheerleading at the high school. She needs to be picked up. So I have left my production studio. I am actually driving, and I says, let me go on my phone, go into Skype, and because the new Skype update allows you to join an existing call, I'm like, let me see if I can just join this call. So you guys can just bring me up to speed, and I'll listen. And then
Diesel had transitioned us over to the Kushner clearance issue a few minutes ago, so that's what we're talking about. And I was answering a question, and I just wanted to add one thing, and I'm going to turn it back
Hold on. I'm actually getting video, too, of R² on my phone. Wow, I'm liking this. You know me and Ken. You know me and my technology stuff.
But what I wanted to say is remind folks, I don't normally talk about the blog, but I put a piece up there about a week or two ago on security clearances where I try to run through some of the issues with who needs a security clearance, why they're important, and the situation specifically in the White House with Jared Kushner and some of the other people without clearances, why that's a big issue. So I don't normally tout the blog, but I would certainly recommend taking a look at that. Especially because I don't know how long we'll be able to devote to that tonight, but I think it explains the problem and why it's a very serious matter.
Didn't we talk about this though? When we first had you on the show and Trump was first brought in as president-elect, and when Trump was setting up all the people involved, the Omarosas and the Jared Kushners, didn't we mention this and say, hey, why are these people involved when they don't have the proper clearances?
We discussed this ad nauseum, and again, and I will say it for 4,000th time, the booth proposes and the nation disposes.
I want to say I've been very critical of Chief of Staff Kelly and some of the decisions that he's made and some of the speeches that he's given, but I want to commend him for what I believe he's done in the last couple of days, because he has fixed, as well as he probably can with the limited authority the president gives him, he has addressed this issue, and he took away the interim clearances for people, and he downgraded Kushner to a secret, as Diesel was talking about a few minutes ago. And that's a big move, because you know that the president doesn't like that. The president dumps everything on Jared's desk. He reads the presidential daily brief, which is the most sensitive document in the country, and now he can't read it anymore. And there's going to be some difficulties he has in doing his job. So I want to commend Chief of Staff Kelly, where I've been critical of him in the past.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it.
Can you explain how this also ties into the beating that Ivanka is getting for visiting South Korea?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are a couple of problems with regard to her visit to South Korea. Number one, she isn't when you go on a trip like that, you have to clear it through the Department of State. And she didn't clear it. And she was also, doing things with her private businesses, which is a big freaking no-no.
And she doesn't really have a title, right? She doesn't have a White House title. She's just his daughter, right?
Well, she's a White House advisor.
Okay. Yeah, isn't that BS, though? Isn't that a BS title? Let's be real.
Yes.
Office of American Innovation is not.
Well, no, they both have BS titles. Right. He just wanted them in the White House with them for various reasons, conflict of interest be damned.
Right, exactly. We were talking about the issue of security clearances, and very, very important to understand. It is a felony, correct me if I'm wrong, R², to intentionally access classified information that is beyond your security clearance level.
Or to provide it to somebody that doesn't have the clearance.
There you go. So, I mean, this is how serious the government takes this type of information. Because, look, for give an example, another person we had on our show, you remember Lieutenant Colonel Dix?
Yes.
He began his career as a missile officer. He literally was one of the guys with his finger on the button. Actually, it's not a button, it's keys, but that's an issue for another day. And now he had to go through to get a top secret security clearance because he had access to missile codes. He literally had access to them. That was his job for the first 5 years of his illustrious Air Force career. Okay, and it was the paperwork you had to do with the T was bad? No, they actually called me four times to discuss things about Lieutenant Colonel Dix. Then they verified me to make sure that I was actually the person I said I was, including I had to give them a copy of my bar application. at the time I was applying for the bar. Mm-hmm. That's how serious they take this stuff. So when you have someone who does not have a security clearance running around the White House with God knows how many pieces of sensitive information, especially what they call human intelligence or HUMINT, where they give names, you know, that's not the kind of thing you want out and about. You know, there are people out there whose lives literally hang in the balance for our ability to keep our mouths freaking shut. And but I do agree with that. I think General Kelly, I think, finally was allowed to do what he wanted to do and simply said – and it's not only him. A number of White House staffers have gotten their security clearance revoked or downgraded.
That's right.
And he is just – and I think – and I got a feeling this is not the end. This is just the beginning. Or to quote the great Winston Churchill – we've not reached the end, nor have we reached the end, the beginning of the end, but we have reached the end of the beginning.
Yeah, you know, and the thing about Kushner that makes it a little bit different for him than others is, you know, first of all, that people talked about there's a backlog in the process. No, there's not. When you work for the White House, you go to the front of the line, and they can adjudicate these clearances very quickly, even for the top secret level, because they'll devote all the resources necessary to do it. But the issue about Kushner that's different from the other people is he will not get approved for the upper level clearance because he has too many problems in his background. He can't get the clearance where other people can once the background checks are completed. For example, Kushner has lied on the SF-86, which is a form that I filled out numerous times. It doesn't take the highest IQ to fill out the SF-86. It only asks about your addresses and contacts and very simple basic information. It takes a while to fill it out, but you don't have to have an advanced degree to do it. And he lied on it and filled it out incorrectly at least four times, if not more, which means he's hiding things, and they're going to find out what he's hiding. And what he's hiding also has to do with some of the very questionable business connections he has over in Eastern Europe, specifically Russia and other places around the world, where he has these conflict of interest with financial dealings. China's trying to bail him out on that disaster he has in New York City and other things. And as a result of those entanglements, regardless of whether legally they would be, whatever they would be legally doesn't matter. The fact that he has those entanglements makes him a security risk, and he will never get a security clearance. Never.
I agree. And one of the things I think you leave out, and most people don't realize when you get a security clearance, when I got mine was they go through your financial life with a fine-tooth comb. And one of the things they are looking at is to see can you be compromised because of your financial dealings. And one of the problems that, you know, I don't know what Ivanka has, as you pointed out, you know, R squared, is his, let's be polite, questionable financial dealings with people who, let's say, aren't on our Christmas card list, especially the Russian oligarchs and the Chinese military. Because if I may digress for a second with your permission, what people don't know about the Chinese military is, in addition to being a very powerful military, and they are, they run most of the commercial industries in China. So when you're dealing with business in China, you're oftentimes dealing with the Chinese military. And where Chinese military intelligence ends and the commercial interest begins is, shall I say politely, somewhat murky. I know this because a friend of mine who was a DOD contractor, they revoked one of their subcontractors' license because they found out they were dealing with China. And they found out one of the guys on his security clearance, one of the things he had to do was list all the contacts he had with foreign nationals. And one of the guys apparently that he had contact with, unbeknownst to him, he told him that he was part of the Chinese trade delegation, was on DOD's watch list as a colonel in the Chinese military intelligence. And they got hot and bothered because they were giving him sensitive information. So that contractor lost its contract. Even though they'd done everything right, they told DOD, yes, we're talking with this gentleman over here. So that being said, this is why I'm surprised that he has any security clearance whatsoever. I'm surprised he got a secret clearance. Maybe that was a compromise they gave him. But that's an issue for another day. And I don't know. Is that an interim or is that a permanent clearance that they've given him?
It's interim. That's why he has it. I don't think he'll ever get the permanent one, but they gave him the interim secret just so that they don't have to fire him out of the White House yet.
Oh, What a shame.
Yeah, it'll be funny if it happens.
Okay, let me just say this. I did not particularly like the Bush administrations, either one of them. I wasn't terribly hot to trot about some aspects of the Clinton administration, too. And some of the things done in the Obama administration I wasn't too thrilled with either. However, I never questioned any of these people's loyalty to the United States or their technical expertise. The people that the Bushes and the Clintons and Obama had in this White House were all highly intelligent people who knew what they were doing. That they didn't know, they were willing to learn or ask people who did. This White House is a severe case of raging incompetence on so many levels. For example, you know, leaving all the drama of that we've seen, the deputy communications director just quit today. I don't know if anyone saw that. And that was Ivanka's chief spokesperson. And he left supposedly to spend more time with his family and pursue interest in the private sector. Yeah. Well, those of you who do not have the video, R-Squared is sitting there playing the world's smallest violin. Let me translate what that means in Washingtonese, because I do speak some Washingtonese. That means is he got caught with his hands in the cookie jar, and he was told either he can leave through the door or the window. Either way, he's leaving, preferably head first. I mean, is there anybody – seriously, R-Squared, is there anybody left from the first days of that administration? Other than Trump and Ivanka,
you know, it's hard to know if they are they're really low level people that we've never heard of in the first place, because I can't think of anybody that was on the radar that's still around. And what you said is exactly right. You know, people say, you know, that this is just politics and partisanship and tribalism at its worst, and there is a lot of now. But look, folks, this administration is simply different, and I agree with Diesel. There was, even if we had profound disagreements on policy with other administrations on either party, the fact is we could always respect that they were loyal to the United States and were trying to do a competent job in bringing in competent people. This administration, not only do they not care about competence because they don't bring in anybody with experience and they don't allow people to ask questions, is I think there are serious questions about even their loyalty. And that goes to the conflict of interest issue and other things that's going on. And what we talked about a few minutes ago with telling Admiral Rogers and the intelligence community that not only can they not admit or talk about the Russia stuff, we're not even allowed to protect ourselves from Russia. I mean, that's borderline treason right there, not to use a fiery word, but I don't know what else to call that when the leadership of an administration says that our adversary, if not enemy, is going to do again what we know that they did and disrupt our democracy and affect our elections, and we're not even allowed to try to defend ourselves. We're not talking about attacking Russia. We're talking about just defending ourselves and protecting our systems, and we're not allowed to do that. So this administration is just different, and I'm sorry that sometimes it's going to come across as partisanship to people who want to back the administration, but this is not about Democrats and Republicans and liberals and conservatives. This is just not about that. This is about really the integrity of our country.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that's a great segue into one of my last points of the evening, and that is apparently after the 2016 election, Congress established the Office of Electoral Integrity, and this was an office that was supposed to be bipartisan to make sure the mistakes that happened in the past didn't happen again. Well, guess what? Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell just fired the gentleman who was running that commission because he issued a report that, in his opinion, seven states were actually – well, not only susceptible, but actually did have their elections hacked. Although he did say he did not think this made a difference in the outcome, the attacks simply were not that big and could not sway the outcome. So his reward is he got fired. Okay. Now I am sorry. I don't care if you're a rubber stamping Reaganite, as we used to say back in my day, or you're a bedwetting liberal like I am. The electoral integrity has always been part and parcel of the United States. That's one of the reasons we've always held it up. We may not like the results, but we trusted the outcome. Even in Bush v. Gore, we didn't like the results. We don't think we may not agree with the Supreme Court decision in Bush v. Gore, which I personally don't, but we don't think there was a fix in it. I mean, there were some technological issues with the hanging chads, but we don't think that anybody was stuffing ballot boxes or anything like that. This goes to the heart of whether we can trust our voting machines. And I'll bring this one up. There was a recent bill in Congress that would require all state elections to have a paper backup, meaning if you use an electronic voting machine, you'd have to print out a paper receipt for recounts. That was killed by Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell. I would like to know someone to tell me what reason you wouldn't want a paper ballot or a paper receipt. I get a goddamn receipt every time I go to the freaking ATM or I go to 7-Eleven and get a soda. I got more bloody receipts than I know what to do with.
You know what's interesting there, Diesel, on that point that you just made, you know, when you say why wouldn't they want it? You know, when a lot of people, and this includes Republicans as well as Democrats who were trying to get to the bottom of the Russian meddling and interference, were saying, hey, listen, folks, we need to take this seriously because it was the Democrats in 2016, but it could be the Republicans next time. So you would think, well, of course, logically, everybody in both parties, and certainly a supermajority of both parties, would then want that. Why are there leaders in the Republican Party who refuse to do that? Maybe they know that it won't be the Republicans next time. Maybe they know that somehow. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I can't think of any other reason why the Republican leadership would be so dead set against fixing this and safeguarding this unless they just knew that it wouldn't be about them next time.
Oh, I mean, again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist either. But, you know – there's a line from a movie that I'd like to quote. It was a movie from the 90s called Wild Things. And it was at a hearing. They're firing the Kevin Bacon character, who's a police officer. He's a police detective. And they're getting ready to fire him. And the police commissioner goes, I served in Vietnam. We had a saying, first time's an accident, second time's a coincidence, incoming enemy fire. This is – we've already had the accident. We've already had the coincidence. It's incoming enemy fire at this point. There is no question there was meddling by the Russians. There is – if you – anybody who has bothered to read the indictment that came down – and by the way, I have, and I have a copy of it. If anybody wants it, send me an email or an IM. I'll be more than happy to turn it into a PDF file and send it to you. It very clearly states that Russian intelligence working with Russian operatives and Russian corporations with ties to the Trump organization, and I do not mean the political organization, I mean the business, tried to influence this election. Okay? And if you read between the lines, it clearly was – this was not a one-off thing. This was seeing what they could do in the future. We were attacked. This was a cyber Pearl Harbor, if you want. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that every single Republican is in the pocket of Putin. But I, you know, the last time an American got so chummy with Russia, the McCarthy Commission was trying to grill him to the wall. Okay? So, no, I'm sorry. One of the reasons why we want the tax returns for the Trump Organization, as I always said, is because it will show the financial dealings with the Russians. And let me tell you something. I've been in business for over 30 years. I've been a criminal defense attorney for over 25 years. And I can give you one solid piece of advice. There is no such thing as a free lunch. If someone gives you money – they want something for it. Maybe they want the goods and services you're offering. Okay, I don't know about you, Colonel, but maybe people just give you things for free because they like you. You're a nice guy. You're very charming, good-looking guy. Maybe they just do that. Me, I go out and pay.
Nice.
If I want my food or I want my dry cleaning or my gasoline, I got to pay for it. That's perfectly acceptable. We're in a capitalist society. Okay. People, especially the Russians, they don't give anything out for free. They were bailing out Trump, which they were. They're bailing out Jared Kushner, which they are. They expect something for it. It may not be as sinister as I'm suggesting. Maybe this – look.
Oh, it is.
You know, let's face it. We give money to politicians and we expect – something in return, access. Okay, now I personally think that's disgusting, but at the same time, I give money to organizations that lobby on for issues that I care about. All right, and they use my money and anybody else who donates to them for thing to get access to politicians, and I'm very glad about that. So I'm part of the problem. I will admit, I am part of the problem. Okay, to think that the Russians, the oligarchs, weren't doing this, I think is incredibly naive. And I'm sure I'm ready to get my public thrashing R-squared. Tell me that I'm being overly conspiratorial, looking for a second guy on the grassy knoll.
No, I mean, that's the problem, is that, you know, there's so much evidence. And if you just want to think logically, forget conspiracy theories, forget partisan politics, forget conjecture. Just look at the facts and then try to apply a little bit of logic. There is no other reason to explain any of this than leverage over the Trump administration. Whether it's personal or professional, it doesn't matter. They have leverage. Just look at it. The facts line up perfectly for that theory. And, you know, that's the problem that we have. And I hope someday that we do find it out. And I hope it's sooner rather than later. And I hope we fix it. But there is no way to there's actually no way. There's no other explanation. There's no other explanation that it can be or that it will be.
Well, that's just a scary thought on a Tuesday night. Here we are. But here's my question that I really want to throw out there. This is something that has been troubling me, and someone raised this point, and I really don't have a good answer. And the answer is this. Let's assume that we're right. What did the Russians get? I mean, we've got a guy who is literally, you know, anything he touches is toxic, including his friends. I mean, he's not doing his friends any good. I mean, they've gotten two victories. One, they've got Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, and two, they got the tax bill. How does that help the Russians? I don't see how it helps them.
Yeah, and that's clearly not what the Russians wanted. But obviously we know that the administration has refused to impose the sanctions. They've given Russia anything they want to do in Syria. I mean, look at what's been going on in Syria lately. I know that we have a lot of issues. People may not be paying attention to Syria. It seems like more of the same. But look at what's going on in Syria. We're letting Russia support the Assad administration, and in partnership with the Assad administration, they're committing even more atrocities. They're attacking U.S. and U.S.-backed military. Did you see what happened a few days ago?
Oh, good God, yes.
And
yes.
So this is the leverage. You know, we're not doing anything about Ukraine. We're not doing anything about, you know, Russian interference in our election or our allies' elections. We're letting, you know, the Russians do God knows what type of financial stuff is going on. I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff will be below the surface. What they want in return may not ever be fully visible to the American people, but they'll be extracting it in great detail from the Trump administration. And that's the problem with these things, is it isn't visible. So people say, well, we don't know. There's no proof. So, you know, they go back to their tribal politics.
Well, I think we're beyond tribal politics at this point. I think at this point you need to decide whether you're on the side of the United States or you're on the side of a foreign government. I'm sorry. I don't know if you've read Fire and Fury, the book on the Trump administration at all. But they talk about the excuse that they were just meeting on a Russian adoption policy. And they talk about how that came about.
Well, we know that's a lie.
I know. But apparently one of the reason they chose this was because this is how incredibly incompetent this administration is. One of the advisors tried to adopt a Russian baby and couldn't do it. So he figured, well, if I have this problem, that means everyone in the nation must have this problem. And that's why they went with that excuse. I mean, for God's sakes, the level of incompetence. I mean, these people, if it wasn't so serious, I think it would be funny. But, I mean, this is just absolutely freaking incredible. But here's the other thing that I think that people, the only reason that I haven't, you know, gone to bed every night streaming or pulled my hair out or flung myself out of a window is because what I saw the student survivors. I mean, these kids have got balls like you wouldn't believe. I don't know if you saw when Mark Rubio had that town hall.
Yes.
So I mean, And, you know, Marco Rubio was doing his standard stock. Well, you know, we'd look at everything. And this kid wouldn't let him go. I mean, I thought I'm tenacious. You think I go full diesel? I'm a wuss compared to that kid. And he's, what, 17 years old? I mean, imagine that kid when he learns how to shave or can, like, I don't know, drink. He's 17 years old. And they're going after these people hog wild. My hat's off to him. It's like, thank God. Cavalry has arrived.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, and not to go full circle, but maybe that's a good way to start getting to our wrap-up here. But, you know, I'd like to remind people, especially if you didn't watch it, what Senator Rubio said. First of all, my good friend Fred Guttenberg destroyed Senator Rubio on his gun policy issues, so that was probably the highlight of the night. But when that kid that you were talking about was talking to Marco Rubio about he wanted him to pledge to not accept NRA money.
Right.
You know, I want to remind people what Senator Rubio said, because I think this is the crux of the matter for this and what we were just talking about with the leverage that the Russians have over the administration. And that is that Senator Rubio said that he takes money from the NRA because the NRA, like others who give him money, are buying into his agenda. In other words, they're not buying his vote or his loyalty. They're giving him money because they agree with him. Well, I think we all know, and I don't need to be cynical, but we all know that that is not the way it works. That they're giving – he's gotten $3.5 million. You don't give somebody $3.5 million because you like what they stand for. The NRA and others, it's not just them, are giving $3.5 million because they expect lockstep with everything that they want. And that's the thing that, you know, Marco Rubio is being disingenuous about. I think there were some things he was trying to be professional in a situation where there was no way he was going to win. He did to some extent, he did his job by agreeing to be yelled at like that, knowing that was going to happen. But that answer was one of his worst because, and this is the thing that, you know, as you said, people don't give you money because they like you. They want something in return. And when you're talking about these large sums of money, like what Russia did to influence the election for the Trump campaign and the $3.5 million that Marco Rubio gets, it isn't because you're buying into their agenda, you're buying them.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I've worked on both sides of the aisle on this issue. I've worked for lobbying groups and I've worked for political offices, and I remember, and I'm not going to say who this is because it was a lot of years ago, but, you know, I remember I got this letter. I was, again, a junior staff assistant. I was ready to throw this letter in the trash because I thought who the hell was this bleeping guy? And I just, as a joke, I went to my boss and said, "Can you believe this guy?" And I showed her the letter and I said, "It's like," she looked at me, red face turned beet red. I said, "You have any idea who this is?" I went, "No, he's the senior lobbyist for this organization who gave our client, you know, gave our senator $50,000 last year." That was back in 1989 dollars, a lot of money. It's like, we get him on the phone right now and tell him his issues will be addressed. Okay. Yeah, money works. And I've been with organizations that have given money, and we sit down and we figure out, okay, where can we spend our money where it does us the most good? For example, in 2008, I worked for a grassroots organization that was helping to target certain congressmen in Florida and California for immigration purposes. We were looking at community, we were looking at demographic. Where did they have the most Hispanic voters? Where could we spend the most dollars to go and get our agenda heard with a sympathetic or at least not anti-immigration agenda? And we sat down and we did this on purpose. And that was it. Well, that was our purpose. Find who we can do the most good with. And we weren't even subtle about it. We put this in emails. That we were looking seriously. Our exact quote was, and this is the exact quote. I know Citizen One is dying to jump in here, and he's sending me evil emojis through the IM thing. Was, we were looking to see where our dollar could open the most doors, and that was the quote. Citizen One, you there? I'm done. Hello.
Well, I was going to have you. I was hoping you would have said that I'm coming in with some big breaking news.
Okay. Are you coming with some big breaking news?
Yeah, I got a couple of breaking news stories here. But I want to thank everybody who was in the chat, and thank you guys for holding it down while I had to go pick up my daughter after a game. Tamara Pius, who was on the show, she said, thank you for letting us be a guest. Joe O'Neill is on the chat also. He's discussing stuff also. But we have some breaking news, two big breaking news stories. Pierre Solomon, who was on our show. Pierre Solomon, if you guys remember, he was the firearms training. He was the guy who was a veteran.
Yep.
He is proud to announce 1 hour ago that he has been, and I don't own a gun, so I don't know how big this is, but he has been appointed Massachusetts State Director and the Northeast Regional Director for the National African American Gun Association. He will be covering the states of Connecticut, D.C., Delaware, Massachusetts, Maryland, Maine, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Vermont. If you need immediate firearms training for your chapter, please contact me. He's got his number is 857-523-0776. If you're interested in joining NAGA and our Boston chapter, please let us know so I can send you information. Ken, you are familiar with this?
Yeah, I mean, they're an organization that was sort of – I do apologize for this not sounding insensitive. They are the people of color's version of the NRA.
Okay.
They are aimed at people who want to learn how to properly use and store firearms, who don't feel particularly comfortable with the NRA because of the color of their skin.
Minorities.
I was trying to be a little more subtle than that.
No, you can say minorities. That's the proper way to say it. To be honest, that's how I would say it, and I'm black, so I would say minorities. And we actually discussed that on the show because that was the whole reason why we had him on, was because, you know, most of your guys that have their permits to carry stuff are white males, and you do kind of feel uncomfortable when you go to the gun clubs. I went to a range with someone, and I was the only black guy there.
Yeah.
So even though I'm married to a white woman.
The joke has always been, if you want gun control, have 10,000 young black males go out and buy AR-15s. You'll have gun control by the end of next week, sponsored by the NRA.
Mm-hmm. And the other big story, this, and I've got to say, Ken called it. We had a story about John Jones passing the lie detector test as far as taking PEDs. Well, guess what? Uriah Faber, UFC fighter, 4 hours ago, shared on his page, breaking news, John Jones found guilty of PED use. He is going to be fined $200,000, and his fighting license has been revoked. So this goes all back to what Ken said.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You said it. You said it doesn't matter. It's inadmissible. Let me see.
Well, that was a whole show we did on lie detectors, mm-hmm. and polygraphs. And I don't think we have time in the next 2 minutes for me to recapitulate, but to make a long story unprofessionally short, there are ways of beating them, there are ways of manipulating them, and the results, depending on who's looking at them, you can get yes, no, and a cow.
So. Yeah, what it looks like here is that his suspension has been imposed. John Jones will have to reapply for his license to fight after his term is up. He will not be able to return to action in 2018. He will not be able to fight until after he applies for a license to fight in March of 2019. In short, they found him guilty of intentional use of performance-enhancing drugs. He can still be suspended by the USADA up to 6 years. This hearing today was just the first step. So even though they're saying that he could reapply for his license in 2019, the USADA can actually suspend him for 6 years, which means career over for John Jones. That's it. He's done. What a sad story. The guy had everything in front of him, and it's just sad. Other than that, we're at 8:30. Might as well get ready to get out of here and say a good night, guys. Thank you for holding it down. Good conversation, good discussion. I was listening in the Skype. I had my mic muted while on the drive home, and I thought I was going to have, you know, a car of teenage girls that were going to be chatty. And to be honest, they weren't. She cheerleaded tonight. She was tired, and you know what? It was a good ride home. So I'm going to give it to Osquid first.
Hey, thanks for listening. That was a great show. We covered a lot. I think we made a lot of good points. And remember, this is about national security, not politics.
Ken?
Want to thank all of our listeners, especially our very special guest, all of our listeners. That's all 12 of you out there. I have not forgotten you. Well, I think we had a great conversation today. I want to thank everyone who's active in the chat. And I would just say this. Hey, folks, get out from behind your computer and call us and talk to us live. We don't bite. Well, on alternate Tuesdays, we don't bite. And a big – hey, look, the other thing is, folks, I know I'm really with some people here in Massachusetts, and I got to say this because I almost got into four accidents on the way to work today. The weather's getting a little nicer. That's great. You know, the snow's kind of melting, but and I'm very excited that we're going to have self-driving cars eventually, but we're not there yet, people, which means you need to use both eyes when you're driving and put down your freaking PDA, cell phone, tablet, etc. Okay?
Et cetera. I got to thank everybody for tuning in, and again, these guys for helping out. I got to give a big up to Marky. Grandson came home today, so big ups to Mark and Brianna. Their son is home from the hospital, released today. Proud Grandma is upstairs. Well, proud Mimi is upstairs right now, holding down the fort. So I'm going to be heading upstairs and spend a little time before taking a quick nap before heading off to work again for tonight. But other than that, I got to thank everybody for tuning in. Good stuff. And, man, Tyreek, my son, man, my hat's off to you. Enjoy this statue today with the Eagles gear on it. Rocky versus Rocky. Hashtag Rocky versus Rocky. A great positive story for the city of Brockton. And you know what? I'm just glad to see the smile on his face and being able to enjoy his team winning a Super Bowl. But other than that, all I got to say is SpongeBob, do me a favor and take a...
Well, see you next Tuesday.
Thanks for tuning in to The Booth at WooBazoo.com. Please make sure to tune in for more Booth next Tuesday night at 7 p.m. New York Eastern Standard Time. Become a fan on their Facebook page and check out their podcast on iTunes. The Booth is hosted by Sinister One, Z-Man, and Ken Diesel.
I've got to start hanging out with friends that are a little more intelligent and understand politics and stuff. It's just that I'm up on this level up here, and all my friends are down here. Me, nah. You guys, nah. Maybe a little more down in here. Screw you guys, I'm going home.
Who?
I can't hold my tongue. These kids are my grandchildren, and you are raising them wrong. They are terrible boys.
Shut up, Chip, or I'll go ape shit on your ass.
I'm gonna scissor kick you in the back of the head.
Yeah. Now turn up the heat.
Go on and get some, boys.
Come on.
I'm 10 years old, but I'll beat your ass.
Chip, I'm going to come at you like a spider monkey.
Like a spider monkey. Go on.
Chip, you brought this on, man.
Greatest Generation my ass. Tom Brokaw is a punk.
What is wrong with you?
Chip, I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew,
I love that.
You going to let your sons talk to their grandfather like that?
Well, see you next Tuesday.
Thanks for tuning into The Booth at WooBazoo.com. Please make sure to tune in for more Booth next Tuesday night at 7 p.m. New York Eastern Standard Time. Become a fan on their Facebook page and check out their podcast on iTunes and iHeartRadio. The Booth is a Sinista One production hosted by Sinista One, Ken Diesel, and R Squared.
I've got to start hanging out with friends that are a little more intelligent and understand politics and stuff. It's just that I'm up on this level up here, and all my friends are down here. Me, nah. You guys, nah. Maybe a little more down in here. Screw you guys, I'm going home.